obviously we're not doing well, clearly. I'm a big part of the team, that's fine. And, you know, if the blame goes on me, I'm willing to take it. I've taken it before. And but at the end of the day, I want to go out and I want to play. And I want the opportunity to play to make it right.
Yeah.
You know, if anybody, you know, I feel like I should get a chance to actually make it right as well.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Lumberland Company. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joining you here from AT&T Park, where the Seagulls have gathered and might be joining me here. This is a different kind of best podcast in baseball episode. We're going to try something a little bit new. Had a chance to catch up with two members of the media traveling party here in San Francisco. First, we'll talk to Erica Weston, the new addition to the Fox Sports Midwest coverage team, and then close out the best podcast in baseball with a visit with Mark Saxon of The Athletic. In both cases, we'll talk a little bit about where the Cardinals are, of course, the Dexter Fowler situation, which dominated the week, and also just the road trip in general. But before that, I wanted to get a chance to introduce you to Erica Weston, her role with Fox Sports Midwest, and that's where the conversation begins.
I believe it's probably your accurate sideline reporter and host, although my duties right now are just specifically sideline. We'll be mixing me in the studio at some point as well.
Very good. That's the voice of Erica Weston, a fellow Coloradoan, though of Highlands Ranch. Yes. And we are talking here at AT&T Park. Your first time here, right? This is the first time in San Francisco, or first time just at this ballpark?
First time at AT&T Park. I've been to San Francisco. I have family that live in the Bay Area, but it's been a while since I've been to this part of the country. But I've seen it a lot on television. I was with the Dodgers for 3 seasons, so I've seen it a lot. I haven't traveled here, and it's probably, it takes the cake as far as ballparks that you get to visit to, and I'm checking it off the list early on in my career here, so yeah, it's beautiful.
That's great. You took a walk around. You went out and saw McCovey Cove and walked out. What stood out to you about this place?
I mean, I'm kind of getting spoiled right now because it's blue skies, and you know, that's rare for here in San Francisco, but I mean, that there's a little landing in right field where you can look out into McCovey Cove, and it's beautiful. You just get the waters. There's already paddle boat people out there, paddle boarders out there ready to catch some home runs, hopefully not from the home team, hopefully from the visiting team tonight. It's gorgeous. Yeah, the views are amazing.
Yeah, it's one of the best ways. In PNC Park here, those are probably the most spectacular as far as views go. And then Dodger Stadium.
Absolutely.
Dodger Stadium's way up there.
It's a classic, but, you know, having gone to Dodger Stadium so many times, it's such a pain in the butt to get there. It's beautiful. The views are amazing, yes, but PNC Park is high on my list because you see that one and you see just how incredible it is looking into the city, into downtown Pittsburgh with the bright yellow bridge. I don't know what it's called, but it's absolutely stunning.
The Clemente Bridge.
That's right. Yeah. That's what it is. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me.
And then right in the far, panoramic would be the way to describe it, is the Warhol Bridge.
Okay.
They also are named for the street, so there's like 7th Street Bridge, but they're great. And it's a great walking town like this one is. I mean, you just, you know, if you never have to hop in a taxi or rent a car, that's the good kind of baseball, you know, road trip, and you just get to see the whole site. So know how you got here to the ballpark today, probably by taxi or by walking. But can you give a quick kind of summary on how you got to be in the position with the Cardinals that you have now with Fox Sports Midwest?
Sure, absolutely. So I immediately came to St. Louis directly from Arizona. I was in Tucson. I spent about 19 months there. I was with the ABC affiliate reporting, doing sports reporting, and I anchored on the weekends. Prior to that, I was in Los Angeles. I worked specifically with the Dodgers organization, and I also worked for their network, Sportsnet LA. I helped launch that one. I think they're in season 5 now. Mm-hmm. And then the season before that, I helped launch the Lakers network. So I was fully immersed in everything Los Angeles sports. I had moved from Colorado out to Los Angeles to finish college and eventually just ended up staying there for a little over 9 years before I left to take the job in Tucson. But, you know, everybody in my position, their paths are very different. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a different approach to how they get to where they want to be. My ultimate goal was always to be on the baseball beat in some capacity. So this, for me, is a dream come true with an organization like the Cardinals. It couldn't have been a better landing spot for me. But when I was in Los Angeles, I got my very first start starting with the Lakers. I then parlayed that into an internship with the local CBS affiliate there. Then you work behind the scenes for several years to kind of get your feet wet, and you sort of end up where you are now.
I can empathize because I chased baseball a lot of places, and I had to cover college football, cover hockey, cover NBA basketball, cover all types of things just to try to triangulate a way to get to baseball. For you, what was the allure of it? What was the draw of trying to chase down a baseball beat?
Because the people on the outside, they say, oh, baseball, it's so long, it's getting longer. But that doesn't bother somebody like me. The reason I'm attracted to it is because I grew up around it. I was always going to the ballparks with my dad. I grew up in Colorado, but, you know, nobody's really Rockies fans in Denver. It's all about the Broncos there. But you do go to the games. I lived in Seattle for a year growing up. We were always at Mariners games, and that was in the glory years, too, you know, with Alex Rodriguez, Alex Cora, Jay Buhner, that whole mix. Ken Griffey Jr. was there as well. So I was exposed to it at a very young age and just fell in love with it. And then when you work in close capacity with an organization, you are completely immersed in it and it becomes an obsession, and I mean that in a good way. But because I was with the Dodgers for 3 seasons, helped them launch it, I worked on their digital side, I worked in the off season, I worked producing their pre and post game shows. So when you work in close capacity with it, your love for it just kind of grows. And I knew that I wanted to be with a team in a capacity where I could travel with them and be completely around it every single day. Is it exhausting? Absolutely, you know. But that's also the beauty of it, too.
That's not always the case. Some folks, you know, get close to something that they want and find that their fondness for it deteriorates because they see too much of it. It's like, you know, here I am a fan of this team. Well, I'll go cover this team. Well, then you see behind the curtain. All of a sudden, the business stinks a little bit more, and it's a little bit hard to be a fan. Do you think not being necessarily like a fan of where you covered has helped strengthen that fondness for this day in, day out? I mean, is that one reason why it maybe you haven't gotten behind the scenes and grown tired of it?
It's very possible, because somebody asked me maybe a week or so ago, hey, would you ever consider moving back to Denver and working for the Broncos in some capacity, covering them in some way, because they are my number one ride or die team as far as my loyalty to fans go, or to teams go. And my answer to that was, no, I don't think I would want to do that because I love them too much. So I don't really want to peek behind the curtain in that instance. But yeah, when you cover a team, you know it. You can't be a fan to it. You have to be objective as best that you can. But when you're in such close capacity with them and covering them, you want them to do well. So sometimes the lines do get kind of blurred.
Yeah. One, that you can still like it. I mean, I am probably ruthlessly apathetic is probably the way to describe it as to the outcome of the game. Time of game is something I'm interested in. How the game is decided is something I'm interested in, but those are basically selfish goals based on deadlines. My feeling about a 1 o'clock start and a 7:15 start are quite different, but they're solely around the deadline. We brought up the Broncos. What's the best Broncos game you went to? I'll just put you on the spot. We can reminisce about Colorado for a little while.
Sure. Let's talk about Colorado. Oh my gosh, there were so many that I went to.
I'm just bragging.
I know. The one that I remember the most vividly was not a good memory, unfortunately.
Oh.
It was, so I was with the team from 2005 through 2008. That year, or my first year, Jake Plummer was still the quarterback. They'd made it to the AFC Championship game to play the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were absolutely demolished. Everybody forgot how to play football. There were rumors of, you know, some goings out the night before that may have played an impact in their performance the next day. The big conversation heading into that game was, oh, you know, Jerome Bettis the bus, he's got asthma, we're going to be able to stop him with this thin air in the Mile High City. That was absolutely not the case at all. He ran completely all over the Broncos. So as far as memorable games, it wasn't a good memory, but I remember it because it hurt so much.
That's a lot like what Tony La Russa said. You remember the ones that ache the most. You remember the losses. You relive them 10, 20, 50 times more than the wins, unless it's the ultimate win. It's the one that ends the season. Yeah, or yeah, in this case, the World Series.
I'm sure you remember the wild card game, or not wild card, the divisional matchup against the Ravens, mm-hmm. when Raheem Moore completely blew the coverage. That one hurt for over a month. I to this day believe that had the Broncos beat the Ravens in that matchup, they would have won the Super Bowl that year, and that would have been the first of two that Peyton Manning won with the Broncos. To this day, I believe that. That one hurt for a long time.
I'll make an admission here. Just don't spread it around. I grew up there. I grew up in the heyday of Elway mm-hmm. and the Three Amigos and just amazing. The Drive, mm-hmm. was, I remember that very vividly. I'm not a Broncos fan.
How could you not have drank the Kool-Aid while you're there?
So it's a good question. I was probably 10. Yeah, I was 9 or 10 when the Super Bowl shuffle happened. And the Bears were this charismatic, amazing, dancing, rapping, almost undefeated, if it weren't for the Dolphins team. Mm-hmm. And so I got cast. It was a hard team not to like. I mean, Jim McMahon, Walter Payton, this was a hard team not to like. You collect their football cards, get their jerseys, all that stuff. I had an uncle who lived in Chicago. I was born in Chicago, and my dad was born in Madison. Mm-hmm. My dad is a huge cheesehead, big Packer fan. My uncle, his brother, saw an opportunity mm-hmm. to woo me to that side of the fence, to the Bears, and won. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could use a few things to argue with my dad about, and was never one to turn one of those down, and became a Bears fan. So I got the McMahon biography. I got this really, my aunt got me this gorgeous Peyton jersey. So I became a Bears fan, and I knew all the words to the Super Bowl shuffle, and have really irritated my father to this day, so much so that he will send me photos that he took of my son wearing Favre jerseys and Packer stuff when he goes and visits him. So, I grew up watching the Bears, and everybody around me was Broncos. Everybody was around me mm-hmm. Broncos. But I was a Bears fan, even to the point where I would wear like a white headband and write Roselle on it just for kicks. But I did get to go to a Monday Night Football game. Mm-hmm. This was my dad's concession. I went to a Monday Night Football game at Mile High Stadium, mm-hmm. Bears, Broncos, Peyton, McMahon. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. It was incredible. At the old place.
Yeah, the old Mile High. I think I went there for one game before they completely tore it down. It was, you know, the Ed McCaffrey days, those sort of glory days, Rod Smith way back in the day. I moved to Denver the year they won the second of their back-to-back Super Bowls. It was within a couple of weeks that I went downtown to the parade. So you get thrown into it, and yeah. you learn right away, okay, this town bleeds orange and blue.
There's a lot of similarities between that and, you know, Packer fandom, and of course Cardinal fandom.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was just thinking the same thing, you know, the fan dedication for their teams and their love of them, whether good or bad, it's loyalty all the time.
Absolutely. And I'm going to ask you about the Cardinals, but
yes.
First I have to tell our listeners about our sponsor, the sponsor that makes the best podcast in baseball weekly, the sponsor that makes the best podcast in baseball possible. Looking for the perfect gift for the baseball fan? Lumberland Company has you covered. They've hollowed out the bat barrel and created the coolest drinking mug ever. They're fully customizable and perfect to commemorate any special occasion, event, or wedding as seen on the knot. These personalized bat mugs are the groomsman's gift they'll cherish forever. Customized with colors, names, text, or youth team logos, or in our case, media outlet logos. You could put they did put one with the best podcast in baseball logo on it. They could do one for Fox Sports Midwest. To create the ultimate gift for any baseball player, fan, coach, or parent, check out their new pennant series featuring 30 unique designs for all 30 Major League Baseball locations. Their new St. Louis mug is perfect for the diehard fan. Drink straight from the barrel all season long with the Lumberland Bat Mug, the official mug of America's pastime. They're 100% handmade in the USA and designed exactly how you'd like. They're offering free shipping on two or more bats with the code STL. Enter STL at checkout when you order two or more bat mugs and get free shipping on your purchase of two or more. That's for best podcast in baseball listeners here. So STL at checkout. Go to lumberland.com. That's lumberland.com. Design your own bat mug today. Lumberland, home of the original bat mug and sponsor of the weekly best podcast in baseball. Erica, I must ask.
Yes.
You parachute in to a team that however you want to describe it, either hasn't reached its potential, is underperforming, in a lot of ways doesn't recognize itself, what it wants to be and what it is. It's hard to reconcile those things. What was your view as you come in from 30,000 feet above to embedded with the Cardinals?
Well, you can't really get a full observation until you're absolutely here 100%, because leading up until when I was actually in St. Louis, you know, you follow them from a distance, you kind of see what's going on. And I had seen, you know, certain guys, Miles Michaelis came in right from the jump. There were a lot of guys that were really making an impression early on, and then it seemed like as soon as I got into town, they kind of fell off a cliff a little bit. But you mentioned them, you know, reaching for the identity. I kind of felt like I relate to that in a sort of way, in terms of, you know, finding my comfort level and being here with the team. But I don't know, they've really turned a corner in this really difficult stretch of their season against these teams that are tops in their division. You know, the Giants are not, but they're always there. The Diamondback series was one thing. They took 2 of 3, and then to see what they were able to do last night, I don't know if this is an aberration or if it is possibly, you know, making that push as we get into the All-Star break, and then making a really heavy push once the end of the All-Star break happens into the fall. In talking with Mike Matheny before every single game, these are the teams, the one last night that showed up. He'd been talking about everything coming together, and last night was finally that, because you have, you know, the bullpen was great early on, but the starting pitching was not, and vice versa. Then you have people that can't hit the broadside of a barn with a baseball, and now all of a sudden it seems like it's starting to trickle down into the lineup. So I hope it's contagious. I hope that it means it's all coming together. But again, too small of a sample size to really tell at this point.
Yeah, unless you like kind of fixate on the fact that they have had these fluctuating stretch. I mean, the Milwaukee series, you know, they go from playing one of the most onerous and terrible games I've seen in a long time with this team to then playing the kind of snappy baseball that they want to do and play in that series finale. You know, this road trip has been like this too. I mean, you look at that final game in Arizona, that goes either way there. I mean, it's a close game for a long time. That tilts one way or the other, and all of a sudden you got a different feel for this road trip. You know, so much of what the Cardinals appear to be dealing with, it starts with their offense. What do you see? Do you see the pieces there for improvement? How do you kind of sort out what you've seen and sort of what on paper they ought to be?
I think we kind of saw that in last night's game, especially, you know, Matt Carpenter really figured things out. But with the addition of Paul DeJong shortly, we expect that to be imminent.
Any moment now,
really.
He was around, itching to swing.
Absolutely. Yeah. You have to see what you get when you insert him back into the lineup to see, okay, at this point, where might our weaknesses be in the lineup? Because it was there early on in the season. You were getting the production from him, but not necessarily everybody else. Of course, there's going to be things that they need to address when trade deadline occurs at the end of the month. But as far as, you know, what they really want to make a priority out of, well, that's, you know, TBD.
Yeah. Do you think it has the depth when you look at, like, I mean, Bader has a good game, you know, at a really key time for him. You know, I mean, they're going to have to make a roster decision with DeJong coming back. They got the riddle with Fowler, how to use him, where to fit him. Do you see this team as having depth offensively, or is it mostly top heavy? It's probably worth noting too that two of the better offensive games this past week have been with Jose Martinez, their top offensive player, on the bench, which is curious too. I mean, it does seem like this team has a lot of things tugging it in different directions, but can depth ultimately be something it leans on?
Absolutely. And yeah, they do have a lot of bizarre offensive sort of quirks when certain, like you said, when Jose is out of the lineup, so you can't really figure out what the reasoning is for that. But I think they have the depth that they want, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's been translating every time that they are rotating in and out of the lineup. And I think that's why we've seen so many different people in the outfield. It seems like they have a lot of that outfield rotation, the depth that they need. Dexter Fowler is number 4, if we're being honest, in that right field rotation. And they've seen really staggering up and down, not consistent production from that spot. So to see the performance that Bader had last night, you kind of go, okay, well, like Mike Matheny said, you got to play the hot hand. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Dex. It means you got to be better if you want to get in there.
It's a real bind for them. I mean, because, you know, his point of view is pretty, he spoke with us, and Dexter was very candid, saying that he needs at bats to get better. And the Cardinals are very blunt with, you need to get better to get at bats. This would be a deadly embrace in computer terms. It would be a catch-22 in literary terms. It's a mess in any term. Mm-hmm. And then you have the exchange of comments and everything as far as, you know, what Mo said, and then, of course, his explanation of what he was trying to say. It has put... I would imagine all parties. Have you kind of felt that on this road trip? There's been some tenseness to this trip.
I think there's been tenseness to this trip. There was tenseness in the weekend series against the Braves before they left, especially, you know, they got swept. That was pretty brutal. But everybody's fighting for playoff time or for playing time, and you don't want to necessarily publicly say the wrong thing, as we saw. It wasn't the wrong thing. Mo was being incredibly honest and open in his time with Dan McLaughlin. But, sometimes as difficult as a pill as it is to swallow, that's what somebody like Dexter Fowler needs to hear. And unfortunately, it's at his expense, because you can't put him in the lineup right now. If you want to make that push, they're still in control of being able to make a run in this division. So, like you said, catch 22, but... I don't know. That's a really tough call. I don't know where you go with that.
Yeah. In your experience covering teams and kind of seeing them, how often do you see internal competition lead to success of team competition? In the sense that, like, if you create internal competition, which is what the Cardinals have, can that be channeled in the right direction? I gotta imagine there are tons of teams. Every team has little different rivalries within a clubhouse or within a dressing room for hockey or within a locker room for football, where one guy wants more playing time than the other guy and just wants the chance to show it. But can that also lead to, you know, problems for a team where they're maybe not all, I guess the phrase is, pulling a rope in the same direction? They're just pulling a rope in their direction.
I hate to, you know, mention this team because, you know, they are the mortal enemy, but I did cover the Dodgers closely, and for several seasons that I was there, they had issues heading into the season with a very overcrowded outfield. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's fighting for playing time, and I feel like we're in the media would talk about it more so than they would be thinking about it. But absolutely, there's internal competition because, you know, if you have an excess of these guys and you're a young guy and you don't want to get sent back down, or in somebody like Yasiel Puig's case, who did get sent back down and to work on it, I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing for that internal competition, but from my experience, from what I had seen, it usually does somehow, some way, over time, work its way out.
For the benefit, for positively?
Yeah, in a good way. Yeah, yeah, because you end up seeing the consistency and the production that you want, and then it just, all of the issues that might have been brewing up until that point kind of just fade away, because it's like, okay, these guys won their starting position in that part.
Yeah, in a way, I guess it has to, right? Because otherwise, because you'll make decisions based on it, and if you are a bottom line, whatever, enterprise, in this case sports, then you go, all right, well, production matters, and the guy who doesn't produce, regardless of how that production got there or didn't, or in this case didn't get there, you have an answer. Mm-hmm. You have, so it sort of works itself out because it has to. Were there hurt feelings? Were there lost games in the process, you think?
Yeah, absolutely, because you're dealing with some more veteran players of the game, guys that have been faces of the franchise for a handful of years, but then all of a sudden you're aging, you're not producing, and you're getting paid a boatload of money. Mm-hmm. So the fans and the front office and the manager have this very kind of difficult sort of tap dance that they have to do. It's wild to see, but, you know, I hesitate to say this as well, but, you know, you do have to feel for Mike Matheny in a situation like this, because you do want your guys to play well, you do want them to succeed, you do want a guy like Dex to be in there and producing, but you also have to be careful with how you approach it. It's very tough.
Yeah, absolutely, and you have to, I mean, one of the things that I always try to think about in this, and it's hard because, you know, you see decisions being made on a daily basis, and you wonder when decisions will be made on the long game. And the long game is, what's the better team? What gets them to be a better team? I can understand if you make a decision and say, well, this makes the better team today to win that game. However, you might play somebody so much and not get the guy who has the track record going. Mm-hmm. And so come July, well, now we're into July, come August, and now you have one guy who is young and the league has adjusted to him, mm-hmm. and the other guy who has a track record, however, is rusty and not been used, mm-hmm. and is basically in mothballs. Mm-hmm. And instead of having both going, because you played the long game, you have neither going.
Yes.
And it's an interesting situation for a manager, because do they have the patience to play the long game while preaching urgency to the team? And we get a lot of urgency.
We did yesterday. Yeah. We got a lot of that urgency. I don't know, because at some point during the season, the young guys will hit a wall. That is a fact that has been, you know, widely known. And it seems like they have a really tough time breaking out of that towards the second half of the season. But yeah, again, you got a guy who hasn't been in the lineup and he's not, you know, producing. It's a double-edged sword as far as how you manage that solution.
It's why they have that job.
Absolutely.
And how they sort it out. And
that's when the analytics come into play too.
True. And the front office has to step in and say, no, this is what we're doing. We are going to, you know, find a way. And you look for matchups. Mm-hmm. You go, okay, well, this is the best matchup. And, you know, you could argue that maybe this ballpark, which we began the podcast by talking about, is not the best matchup and gives a benefit of a team that can go out there and put a Harrison Bader in right field and play great defense and cover a lot of ground versus a Jose Martinez or a Dexter Fowler in right field. You know, I do think that one of the things that's really stood out to me on this road trip is just the different approaches with different guys. I mean, Jose Martinez leads the team in hitting, and yet he's being moved all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, first base, right field, because they want to try this to solve the infield defense and the outfield offense all with one move. We saw it once. One out of 4 days. So how committed to that are they? You know, Tommy Pham batting second. They want that, but that's not the only place he's hit. Dexter Fowler has hit all the top 8 spots in the lineup, and he's not guaranteed a spot. Mm-hmm. And yet the only guy who hasn't moved at all is Marcel Ozuna. I mean, Yadier Molina's been 4th, 5th, or 6th. He hit 3rd the other day.
Yep.
But Marcel Ozuna is like this, like, I don't know, he has squatter's rights to batting cleanup and left field, and I find that commitment so fascinating because of the message it sends. We're going to move everybody around because this guy is so important that he is either going to what it basically says is he's going to go or the Cardinals don't go.
Yes,
that's what it says to me.
Yes, absolutely. And we heard Mike Matheny talk about that yesterday, and he had to kind of scratch his head and say, "Oh no, I did move him one time. We figured that out. He did move him in the
one time. Marcel thought it was a typo.
That's right. He said in the text message he thought it was a typo, which is hysterical and probably completely something Marcel Ozuna would do. But he said, you know, that's what we signed up for. That's what he signed up for. And up until this point, he's deserved that right. He's been consistent. He's been, you know, pretty quiet as of late. He was quiet in Arizona. He's been quiet in one game here in San Francisco. But yeah, it speaks to the kind of confidence that they have in him in that spot in the lineup, and of course in the outfield.
Or need. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they might talk confidently, but I mean, you know, he's finding a way to get RBIs. I hear that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that he's strikes fear in the hearts of opposing pitchers these days.
No.
Not if they have a slider.
No, not at all. I don't see any sort of fear out of Marcel in the box when he steps in there.
This is true, yeah. Or projecting or having. That is very true.
Yes.
Good point. How do you you come into this team and it's basically on wobbly footing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not, I mean, you can pick your metaphor. It's either in quicksand or it's just unsteady.
Mm-hmm.
How does that inform your approach as you come up with questions, as you think of stories? Because maybe before answering that, maybe to give some people some appreciation, your day starts really early to try to track down pregame stories, correct?
That's correct, yeah. And usually it's we try to do something that's a little bit off the beaten path, not in a completely abstract sort of way, but just maybe something that they're not really thinking about, or somebody that deserves a little bit more extra attention today. But yeah, when you get home from the ballpark, you're already thinking, okay, what are we going to do tomorrow? And then you wake up the next day and say, all right, what are we going to do today? What are some numbers we can talk about? Some things that maybe aren't getting enough deserving attention. But as far as, you know, being able to formulate the questions and the relationships that you're forming around them, when you're thrown into a possible quicksand situation, it's tough because they're not familiar with you. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with them and you know, how they might respond to certain sort of questions. So that's very tough. And on the outside looking in, watching a baseball broadcast is usually very streamlined. And, you know, you have guys like Dan that have been doing it forever and know Cardinals from the history of time, you know, like the back of their hand. Mm-hmm. And you get thrown in. This job, by no stretch of the imagination, is easy. You, on the road especially, it is a grind. You get maybe 2 hours of spare time before you come to the ballpark. But yeah, you're constantly searching for that storyline and wanting to highlight somebody that maybe we hadn't focused on enough the day before.
So how do you balance what you think? Sort of, I mean, some of we have this balancing act too in the newspaper. Is how much do you balance what you think people need to know, mm-hmm. sort of the vegetables, mm-hmm. and how much do you then go, well, I need to give them something that they want to watch, mm-hmm. the dessert. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of balance those things?
It really varies game by game because mm-hmm. you have to take into consideration what's happening the night before or what might be happening today. Obviously, we could be anticipating a lot of news today with some roster changes, some movement. That is something that you obviously want to deliver to them because you have to. That is the pertinent information of the day. But then you kind of search through your head and think, well, who haven't we talked to for a while? Or who has these eye-popping numbers that need to be addressed and people need to give them the respect? I don't know. I like to credit my pregame interview yesterday with Harrison Bader as the reason he was a triple shy of the cycle. I'm just saying.
There you go.
Just kidding.
what was it that brought Harrison? Because he was starting in right field and sort of it fit into the larger scope of Fowler back, but here's Bader still starting. Is that what went into that?
Yeah, absolutely. And considering, you know, Matheny really has a lot of confidence in him. He's been talking about him in his postgame press conferences, even unprompted a lot of times lately. Yeah. He just loves offensively and defensively the work that he's doing. And you put a guy in right field whose defensive numbers are incredible in a position where triples are, you know, like the bread and butter from this ballpark. So, yeah, that was a really intriguing. And plus, it was, I believe, 50th start of the season in right for him last night. So, just kind of fit the bill.
Yeah, that's pretty. That all works. And then post game, I mean, you obviously. Well, where do you watch the game from?
I'm at home. I'm usually in the press box. Okay. On the road, I rotate between in the camera well, in the dugout, and up here in the press box. I did split time between those two last night. It did get cold down there. I needed a little bit of a break. But you usually get a better sort of feel and context for the team when you are sitting down there in the dugout. You can kind of see their little quirks and maybe things that they don't show on the broadcast. I know they did show Jed Jerko giving Luke Weaver a hug in the dugout last night, but if anybody missed it, you know, there's obviously going to be a moment there. Right. It was the first hit that he had allowed in the game, so I get to see that close up. Perhaps if they missed it on the broadcast, that's something that I can chime in for. So you get to see a lot more when you're down there, which is why it's beneficial to have the reporter down there.
Yeah, I guess that's what I was going to ask, is how much of that informs then what you ask afterward?
A little bit, but it's mostly about on what happened on the field, or, you know, in some cases what didn't happen mm-hmm. on the field. But and also for them, it's nice to see that I'm in close proximity to them because they get familiar with me as well.
Yeah. Jim Hayes has taken on, you know, as the Fox Sports Midwest sideline reporter on the road, mm-hmm. I think 9 times out of 10, maybe even 9.5 times out of 10, ask the first question.
Yes.
You know, and often probably I'm guilty of asking the last question and then one too many questions after that. However, he has the leadoff question. Mm-hmm. You've done that. What goes into that? How do you kind of strike the right tone? I mean, because it's silly, but it's a pretty good, it's an important question, probably more so after a loss
yes.
than after a win. But how do you think through it? Does it just happen?
It's pretty I'd say it's a lot easier in a win than a loss. But it's usually kind of develops itself. It speaks for itself. Obviously, yesterday the story was Weaver's spectacular start after a crap month of June. But yeah, it's very tough when you go into the manager's office and you get the responsibility of asking the first one, because, again, I'm still feeling out how people are going to react. And in the final loss against the Braves series, you know, you were in there. It was tough. With
yeah,
my,
that's right. I was. Yeah.
And he doesn't know me like he might know Jim. And he doesn't know how I'm going to react, or I don't know how he's going to react. And we did have an exchange the day after the first day in Arizona. Like, it's all good. We're good. It's cool. No worries. We're still feeling it out. I didn't feel attacked or, you know, offended by anything he said. I'm a big girl. I can handle it. But it was nice to see that I was earning a little bit of respect with the team, as far as, you know, having that responsibility of asking the first question. You know, sure. Because their reactions are, in a bad loss, are not favorable, and you have the responsibility of sort of navigating through that tough water.
Yeah, and also making sure that it gets off on a tone where you get an answer. This is something that I try to explain a lot to people in St. Louis, or even students, when I go talk to them, or colleagues or whatever, is it's so weird when people focus on the question. It's not about the question. No. It's about the answer. Mm-hmm. And the question has to be different. I have covered a manager before who... Well, I've covered a manager now. I've covered a manager who likes to correct me. I've covered managers who really like to correct me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know what? A good way to get answers is to sometimes play dumb.
Sure.
And every so often I'll get an email, or every so often the manager will ask me, like, well, why did you ask that question when you know the answer, or you should know the answer? And it's like, because I don't need to show off.
Right.
I need an answer. And I've also covered managers who enjoy a debate. And so you can ask with a little bit more edge. You can sort of... permission to treat the witness hostile and say, make statements and let them make them prove it wrong. So it's really interesting. How do you view asking questions? Because it's different for me, because I don't, they can pause for me. Mm-hmm. With you, the camera's running. Mm-hmm. If they pause.
Mm-hmm. I've been in a couple of situations when I have heard people ask questions, and then the manager or whomever it might be says, well, you just answered your own question. So the key is...
That's not good video.
It's not good video, because then obviously you don't get the response that you want. The key is balancing between, you know what just happened because you just watched it, obviously, but leave it open-ended because you know what you kind of want to get out of them, and make it leading into a positive sort of way, despite... something bad maybe not happen, or something bad happening, something less than favorable happening in the game. But yeah, leave it, provide enough information so that you can lead it into the direction of the answer that you want without over answering your own question.
Right. Like you did with Jack Flaherty. In that situation, they lost, obviously. He's not going to want to ruminate on it. He's probably not going to want to give a play-by-play. And you kind of struck to the heart of it and said, hey, look, two bad pitches cost you. How'd that happen? Or what do you recall of those two pitches? And it was clearly a question that read the room and kind of read the reaction. And I think you probably got what you wanted from that, right? I mean, it was taken aback momentarily, but you got what you needed.
Absolutely. And with those, you have to be, the pitcher, sometimes you have to be a little bit more careful, because, well, I guess hitters in that instance too, sometimes they don't want to hear about their numbers, but these guys take it very seriously. And Jack was very emotional after that game and upset, and rightfully so, because he was pitching up against the Diamondbacks ace, and he was going pitch for pitch with him up until those two mistakes. So but at the same time, they're grown adults. They're playing Major League Baseball. They know this comes with the territory. That's what I preach that more than anything. They know that this comes with the territory. I'm sorry, I don't want to ask you about this bad pitch that happened, as much as you don't want to answer it, too. But such is life, and that is both of our jobs, and we're both adults. So let's get through this as respectfully as we can.
So last thing, and let's close on this. All-Star break is on the horizon. All-Star will be announced this week. Cardinals will probably have a couple of them. Miles Michaelis, who you mentioned, certainly deserving of it. Yadier Molina, hard to ignore him, especially if they can find a way to take a third catcher. It'd be impossible to ignore him in the National League. For you, now that the All-Star break is on the horizon, what is the question this team has to answer in the coming weeks? Or the theme that this team has to kind of convey that says, you know what, they're not going to be mediocre and circling 500 all year, that they're going to contend?
I think you've got to see it put together top to bottom. You have to see more of these consistent games like we saw last night. Obviously, you're not going to throw 11 runs up on the board every single night. You're going to, I think historically it shows that after the Cardinals put up that many runs, they score one, none, two the next day. So in that instance, you've got to put it all together. They have to, because making one move post-trade deadline or at the deadline is not going to make a difference if the guys aren't producing. They're close, but the whole story up until this point this year is, what is the identity of the team? And you can't, because you can't answer that question because it changes every single day. So that being said, I think finishing this series and then the two with Chicago, and then I think it's Cincinnati at home right before the break, that's a good stretch of series to kind of figure out who they are, especially right now, figuring out all of those details at the end of this really tough stretch of their schedule.
And then they take it to Chicago for 5 games in 4 days, which could decide the season.
Right out of the gate, you're coming in with your most hated division rival, probably.
First place team, possibly.
Absolutely. And 5 games in 4 days. Whew, let's go.
That's where the season will tilt.
Absolutely.
And it comes at a time where Mozeliak and Gersh can decide if they're going with a shopping list or going with a garage sale.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. We'll see.
Well, welcome to the beat. Welcome to the road. Welcome to St. Louis. Welcome to baseball. It's good to have you around. It's nice to have somebody else who chased the beat for a long time and to see you get the brass ring. That's always good, as opposed to I know what that's like. So
yeah,
it's very cool. It's also good to have a Coloradoan around.
They're always good people, right?
Yeah.
I love talking to people from Colorado. Thank you so much. It's an absolute thrill to be covering this team, and I can't wait to get more familiar with St. Louis and everything. So thank you.
A special thanks to Erica for taking the time before her pregame work to chat just about the team, but also about her role. Now we shift to a little bit different discussion, one that really kind of drills down on the place and where the Cardinals are right now as they approach the All-Star break, and specifically about what to do with the Fowler question and the Fowler dilemma. No one better to talk to about that than Mark Saxon, who has covered the Cardinals the last few years, first for ESPN and now for The Athletic. We spoke in the back room here at the press box of AT&T Park, and the conversation begins where you think it would. Is there a solution, a quick one, an eventual one, for what the Cardinals can do with their right fielder and his $80 million deal? Welcome back to the Best Podcast in Baseball, joined now by Mark Saxon of The Athletic, here in the birthplace of The Athletic, San Francisco, correct, right? Is that how this works?
That is true. You're making me feel guilty, like I should have taken a trip down to the office while I was here.
Well, no, I think it's like a virtual office, right? Everything, like, that's the whole thing. No ink, no paper, no office, right?
Oh, it's completely, it's completely paper-free. Everything is done paper-free, like expense reports. I used to have to wrestle with the fax machine and tape them on there and stuff. Now I just hit a couple buttons on my phone. I love that part.
I'm
a little old for it, though, so I'm adjusting.
I do have expense jealousy, and to be honest, as we do reams of receipts and everything. But I wanted to ask you, because I mean, you've been around this team for multiple years now. You've certainly been in the thick of it, and just kind of wanted to chat with you about how to solve basically the Dexter riddle. You know, this road trip starts with Fowler on paternity leave, and then John Mozeliak makes comments trying to, as I'm sure you probably heard from him as well, trying to articulate how he gets questions about effort and energy in regards to Fowler. And then he tried to cross the bridge to make the point about how it's true for the whole team. Sometimes perception is reality. However, he got halfway across the bridge, and Fowler was the only guy really mentioned by name. And that created a real important buzz and I think important story about what's Fowler's place on this team. not just with playing time, but also in the clubhouse, what his relationship is like with the team. At the end of last season, I went up to him and asked him if he would be open to a trade because it just didn't feel like a fit. He has insisted that he can make it fit. For you, how do you solve this?
Well, I think teams kind of have mechanisms in place for these types of situations. It's not the first time that there's been a disgruntled player or a player who doesn't necessarily get along with management. It happens all the time, even on great teams. But I do feel like right now there's a little bit of an equilibrium with it. But I do feel like long term they have to figure out what he's going to be for them. And they have to decide if what he's giving them, for given the difficulties and the fact that this has now become public, is it worth it? And how do you solve that? It's a really difficult one to solve. And you think about, you know, trading a player with that contract and with that production, those numbers along with his name, is a very difficult thing to do. And so I do think they'll resolve it at some point. But to me, you know, it's fine for now. And again, like, people think, like, there's this constant drama or whatever around it. But each player has his own drama going on, right? And this is just one more extreme one. I think, if anything, it's kind of an amusing thing to the other guys in the clubhouse. I don't feel like it's sort of swallowing up this team at all. I don't know how you feel about that.
No, I mean, we saw him, what, cracking wise and right, playing cards. And if anything, I mean, his teammates, while not, like, really rushing to comment publicly, have been really supportive of him, if that makes sense. Like, they're not like, you know, if you ask about it, they're not really effusive when the recorder's running, but they were very clearly like, this is not the perception of him. You know, I thought his peers in the clubhouse made it very clear how they felt about Dexter. They see he's struggling offensively. They see him struggling in the field, but they're not like questioning, is this guy just expecting, you know, to put in not any work and get it back? They see him doing that. You've had probably the same experience, right, with his teammates?
Yeah, and I think also publicly, if it's sort of a player versus management, most players, at least publicly, are going to support the player, just because I think that's kind of how they think of it. You know,
good point.
Yeah, I think. But also, yeah, I haven't actually – that's an interesting thing you say about that, because I haven't actually gone on the record and asked too many teammates what they think about that whole thing. It seems to me this is a kind of a controversy-averse group. They'd probably not want to talk about that a great deal. I don't know what your take is on that.
No, and that's the thing, is like they don't want to – I mean, they're not going to go on in detail about it. I mean, they're going to say, yeah, you know, we all could do better. I heard a lot of that. Like, yeah, we get the point. We all could do better. You know, and when they're like, well, criticism of Fowler is a criticism of the whole clubhouse. Well, we need to be better as a team. I mean, I heard a lot about that, almost to the point it's like, okay, yes, this is not revelatory. The Cardinals want to be better. That's not exactly news, right? Right. I mean, of course they want to be better.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he's not the only player who doesn't bust his butt on every ball hit to the outfield, or bust his butt on every ground ball to the shortstop. You know, Yadier Molina doesn't run out every ground ball. I mean, let's be honest. So yeah, very few players in the major leagues do. Certainly very few players who reach, you know, get into their 30s. You know, there's a real grind to this game. That's the other thing people don't realize. You know, Harrison Bader obviously is a tough guy to be contrasted against. And
that's a really good point.
And he's busting his butt. He's hungry. That's his style. There are a few guys in the league who run hard on everything all the time. But I would say they're the minority rather than the majority. So I do feel a little bit like Dexter has been singled out here, whereas if you look across the major leagues, that style, that sort of always in control and always and not necessarily playing at 100%, is more common than the other style.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree that, for me, the whole Dexter episode here, the L'Affaire de Fowler, or whatever we're going to call it. The Fowler Affair, as I muddled through French, I guess. I think what it revealed to me was his place on the team compared to some of the other guys who they go out of the way to play play no matter what. And I thought that, like you said, it's a stark contrast between Fowler and Bader. I would argue the greater contrast is between Fowler and Ozuna. You see the absolute contortions that the team has gone into here with Jose Martinez, playing him a lot at first base. Oh, now halfway through the season, now he's part of right field. He's out there working on right field and not playing two games. The guy with the highest batting average and second highest OPS, mm-hmm. not playing in two games on this pivotal road trip. Whereas Ozuna is like untouchable. I'm so astonished by it. He's batting cleanup and playing left field every day. And I think I asked Mike about this. I'm like, why is that? What is the commitment that he gets to that spot that even Matt Carpenter or some of these other guys don't get, and the $80 million guy doesn't get? Yeah. You know, Ozuna gets to work through things and gets to do things that these other guys don't. Why? And Mike's answer was, spent a lot to get him. We spent all winter hyping him up. Got to commit to him. Guy doesn't have a home run in 16 games, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah, I think they're just kind of stuck. They need him to produce. He was sort of the centerpiece of this sort of effort to at least show the fan base that they can make a big move, right?
Yeah.
And so I think there is.
So was Fowler, right?
Yeah, but something about a power hitter, you know, something about your cleanup guy and a guy who had 38 home runs last year. I guess the feeling is they need him. They just simply need him to do it. And moving him around or manipulating him, I guess they don't feel it's going to, you know, help that at all. Whereas Fowler, and I do think there's a little bit of a difference in that Fowler's lack of production is starker even than any of the other guys we talk about, with the possible exception of Colton Wong, who plays off the charts defense, like difference making defense, and Dexter doesn't do that. So I do think there's a starker contrast in terms of performance. When Ozuna wasn't hitting for power, he was at least hitting a little bit. And so I guess that's one sort of counter argument for their case.
It also could be like their view of the guy, right? Move Ozuna, who is a Gold Glove left fielder and may be the best choice for this team in right field. Granted, his arm isn't healthy, so maybe that ruins that. But a guy who has said that he's comfortable hitting cleanup, and it's like they'll just go every which way to make him comfortable, mm-hmm. when Fowler's been agreeable or at least accepting of being moved around. So once you say I'm willing to move to right field, then maybe it opens up the whole thing that you can move anywhere.
Yeah, and I do think that was probably where it started when they started moving him in the lineup. You know, he looked around and he said, wait a minute, Matt Carpenter is hitting what I am or maybe even worse at that time. Marcell Ozuna hasn't driven a ball all year, and I'm going from leadoff to sixth or whatever, you know, and then they're moving him around. I think that's, if you were to really, you know, probe him on where his dissatisfaction began and I think the friction with Mike Matheny started, I think that was it. He's like, why me? Why am I the guy being moved, whereas these other guys are not? But I would argue that he wasn't hitting the ball as hard as those guys when he was making outs. So if you dig into the numbers on Dexter, it's a little bit frightening because, you know, exit velocity is down career-wise. Speed is down off his career norm. So it does almost look like there's a real kind of steep decline there. And I can't put my finger on it for the life of me.
No, you're right. I mean, you're right on both regards. I think Dexter had a strong argument to make is, why am I the one being, and Colton too, to a certain extent, why did they take the brunt of the offensive problems when they are at most complementary players now? And that's what it comes down to is, and it gets to the question that I wanted to ask you about, is they clearly feel that they are the best team they can be if Marcell Ozuna is going, whether that's at 75 or 80% or 90%. They clearly know they're the best team they can be with Matt Carpenter going, regardless of where he fits in the field, and with him batting leadoff. Okay. Where do you think this team is best with Fowler? In the sense that if he's going, is the team best? Is if he's going at 70%, 80%, if he gets it figured out, is that the best Cardinal team, or is the best Cardinal team something a little different? Is it with Bader in it? What? How do you maximize this roster the way it is today?
Boy, I like the fact that they're trying to clean up the defense. I think that could be one pathway for them to sort of get out of this sort of two steps forward, two steps back rut that they're in. Because they've waited 4 months for this big offense that they thought they had to show up, and it hasn't shown up. At what point do you try something different and try to just really support your pitching? The bullpen's been better. The starting rotation's been great all year, so why not make that your thing? Are they going to be an elite defensive team? No. But with Paul DeJong back at short, with Colton playing that way at second, and if you're going to use Harrison Bader in right, I kind of like that look. I think now you've got a really good defensive outfield. You're strong up the middle, and you're fine on the corners if Jed Jerko, let's say, on any given day is playing third base. So I kind of like that as a look. And where does Dexter fit in there? I don't know. I mean, can you live with – I guess he's the fourth outfielder for now until you can accommodate something. But I do see – and that's kind of what I wrote at the Athletic the other day. I just do see it trending toward a divorce. I just have not seen a lot of kind of situations like this that are this public end well.
No, I don't think we ever have. I mean, you know, not with the Cardinals, not with other teams. Scott Rowland was traded to Toronto. Jim Edmonds had some friction with Tony, and now they're best of pals. But you know, his contract lapsed, and he moved on. That's right. And then you had, David Freese was traded eventually. That's not the same kind of thing. But Colby Rasmus was part of the key. That's a great example, Colby Rasmus. So you're right. I mean, and Mike Leake. I mean, just recently, Mike Leake. How it's hard not to see some similarities between Mike Leake and Dexter Fowler.
Yeah, except I think Leake was performing at a level where you could at least kind of catch a team's interest, right? Like if they needed an innings eater, and that was Seattle. He there was something about him that they would pay him some of his salary. I don't know if there's. I'm kind of curious about this. Is there a team who thinks Dexter Fowler is a change of pace candidate enough to pay even a third of his salary? What do you think about that? I doubt it personally.
I don't see how. Yeah. I mean, unless they. I just don't see what kind of team would that be. You know, I mean, it's not like Atlanta's collecting veterans anymore. Though I could see like him having a place with that team. Like when you look at what Atlanta has, I could see him having a place with that team. I don't know how much he'd play, but some of those young guys have gone through their injuries. At some point in time, that season's going to get long for them, and you could see left field being a place for Dexter, but how much money would they? They're none. You know, they're not collecting. I mean, you're looking at the Cardinals having to do something that they have studiously avoided, which is carrying somebody else's money, and they will be doing that for Fowler and Leake. That's no small change. That's like it's 10 times Tino Martinez.
Yeah. Well, it's like join the club. I mean, a lot of teams have done that, right?
When you make, right, but they've avoided it.
Yeah, they could maybe. The other possibility is you find a trade partner who has another bad contract, somewhat analogous, somewhat similar in terms of money, but you need that player more. Like they don't really need outfield depth, for example,
like a starter.
Yeah, starter or reliever.
Just like Mike Leake.
Although the problem is a reliever's not going to have that kind of money on his left on his deal. Maybe a bad closer, that kind of thing.
Well, Brett Cecil. I mean, they could trade for Brett Cecil.
Another Brett Cecil. I think one is sufficient, but all due respect to Brett. He has, you know, he's been struggling.
But that's the kind of contract you're talking about. You don't see too many of them.
No, you really don't, which is probably another one Mo might like to have back. But I will say this, like, the Dexter Fowler contract's a bad contract, but it's not, you know, it's not $140 million or something. We've seen worse, right?
Well, Ellsbury, right? Like, you've seen worse. There are
Hamilton or, Albert Pujols, frankly. I mean, I hate to say that with a lot of fans, but it's a bad contract.
Right. I mean, it's not impossible to – it's finding a team that – it still leaves the Cardinals footing the bill. I mean, that's the thing, and that is something that they have avoided, right? They have not had the poor-fit, high-expensive contracts, and now our high expense contracts, and now they will have had more than almost $200 million of them, right? In Leak, Fowler, and Cecil, where you go, okay, how's the fit? You know, how? And that to me is the crux of the question. I think you could go, is this team better with Brett Cecil at his best? I think the answer to that is yes. They don't have that guy, especially now. And if he's performing well, then that is part of the best image of themselves that they have. The question with Fowler's harder. Like, is this team at its best with Fowler at his best? I'm not sure the answer is yes. And it does seem like that's how a team should be. You could allow for a team to be built that way, right? It's got to have depth. But if you go, okay, are you at your best right now with the players that you've signed and the money you've invested in them? I don't know. I mean, because you're right. That defense first is a great idea. I mean, it looks good. And I would maybe quibble with you on one point there, that they probably are one of the best defensive teams if they bend that way, because they'd be above average at every position. Who could say that?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. The problem, like your question about how do you maximize Dexter Fowler's value to you, the problem is what Dexter Fowler is at his best is a really elite on-base guy.
Yep.
So he's a leadoff hitter. That's what he is. And if he gets back to hitting, you know, Matt Carpenter at this point, the way he's played since they put him back into that leadoff spot, I feel like that's not going to change, certainly not this year. And they've gone back and forth so many times now, they should just leave him there. So that's really, I think, part of the problem of just accommodating that place for Dexter Fowler. It just the role really isn't there. The role doesn't exist on this team.
I mean, a number two hitter. You could have a really high on base percentage. He's not a damage, but I mean, career high homers.
But nowadays, a lot of teams are putting their best player in that two spot, right?
So the Cardinals aren't.
Well, Tommy Pham hits there. I mean, I know he's been in a bit of a thing, but you could argue that he's sort of your best overall hitter in that he has.
Isn't Ozuna supposed to be?
Well, Ozuna's more profile as he doesn't, like Tommy, when he's going right, is going to get on base more than Marcel. Marcel's going to drive the ball more, so I think Tommy's going to look to hit the ball in the gap and maybe, you know, get some guys in motion. But, yeah, they don't have, there's no like obvious best player on this team. That's right. Part of the problem, right? There's Joey Votto or Mike Trout two hit seconds.
Or Paul Goldschmidt.
We could debate it around it.
But that's kind of my point, is like, if you want to, I guess it gets them back to where they were last year, where it was just like stack on base. But I mean, if you wanted to find a place for a guy who was peak OBP and a switch hitter, it wouldn't be all that bad to be, you know, second in this lineup, or you know, second or eighth. You could find a way for that to work.
The problem is I just can't see him getting the at bats to get back to
that's
what he wants, but it's just hard to see that happening. You know, I mean, he needed to get it going sooner, and that's just the unfortunate. It's a very rough kind of a business these guys are in, and when you can't get your bat going for 3 months, and I know that people are gonna, you know, Mike Matheny's not terribly popular, it doesn't seem to me, among Cardinals fans right now, because the team hasn't been great, but that's one where I can't quibble with him on. I mean, nothing Dexter Fowler has done has given you any argument to make him your starting right fielder right now.
So we're coming up on the All-Star break. I mean, do you see this team as anything more than a 500 team?
I mean, there's, what are they, 5 games over .500? That seems like what they are. Now, if this offense that I've thought had more in it all year finally does, then I'm wrong. But no other part of the team. Like, if you look at the rotation, it's been great. But I don't look at this rotation and go, this is just elite top to bottom. What it looks to me is like incredibly solid top to bottom. It's all kind of the same guy. It's a right-handed pitcher with good stuff, good athleticism. It's kind of five of the same guys in a weird way, their rotation. So they're all kind of like, you know, 2 to 3 starters to me. That's what they all kind of look like. So I don't see this as like, you know, some kind of incredibly dynamic rotation that you'd be terrified to face in the postseason, for example. So, yeah, right now it looks like a pretty mediocre team to me, unless, and I've been saying it all year, if they hit, they can win more.
We're in the press box at AT&T Park, and we just got done talking to Mike Matheny here at the end of this part of the road trip. Then they venture out into the interleague play for a two-game series with the Chicago White Sox. And, you know, he came back to this idea of, you know, that this team just kind of hasn't really kind of defined itself yet. And I was trying to think of how to ask the question, and I couldn't quite come up with the phrasing, but in the sense of, like, isn't that a little bit of a euphemism for our team isn't playing well, right? If it were in first place, wouldn't it be defined? Yeah. And maybe the answer is no. Maybe even first place teams haven't quite hit their – maybe all teams haven't defined themselves. So I want to ask you this as we close. As this team looks for, quote-unquote, its definition or its identity as a team and desperately wants to be a contender and, in all reality, needs to be a contender or else wholesale changes will be afoot, is Fowler part of that? Do you see a way that Dexter Fowler is part of what elevates this team and sends the season in a more positive direction, which would be October?
Boy, that's really tough. And like I said, I just don't see him having that role, right? I just don't see that there. To me, if I were to, like, if you were to force me to say what's the face of this team, I would say, like, a Jordan Hicks. Yeah. It's just that it's that really young pitching, right? And it, if it's going to come around, it's going to be that. It's going to be these guys are just going into series and always giving their team a chance to win. And I think we do see some of that at times when they're winning these series. That's what's happening. They're winning, like, you know, 2 games 4-2, and then they're losing 1 game 4-2. They're that kind of team. And so I think if they're going to do that, I think it makes sense to fortify the defense. So I'm fully on board with that. So I would say that they'd be more of a pitching and defense team. But no, I just cannot see, especially now, you know, just the lack of production. I just don't see Dexter Fowler fitting in there.
I like your idea there of, like, who is the player that personifies this team. I'd go with Marcell Ozuna, the guy who has a deed on a spot in the lineup and a deed at a spot in the outfield and is going to be there every day, you know, and whether he's hitting or not. And it kind of seems like the Cardinals. The Cardinals feel they have a spot waiting for them October, and we'll get there. However we get there. And, you know, this idea that you don't have to go out and grab it or take it, and you can kind of get through by middling, you know, middling production, sometimes middling fielding. I think there's a lot of parallel there between Marcell Ozuna's season and the Cardinals' season in general.
Yeah. If he becomes the face of the team, like, by the end of the year, I think that's a good thing for them.
Probably.
That means he probably got it going a little bit, and he is hot enough that he could carry them there, right?
That's what all his teammates and the Marlins say and everything like that. But, man, it's been interesting to watch. You know, I mean, there are times where it just is like he just feels or he looks kind of like he's lost, or it looks like he feels he's lost at the plate. You know, I saw 22 sliders in a row, it seemed, the other day. And, you know, I don't know. And that to me is just where the team is at. You know, if they are pot committed on him, and he's a big presence at the plate, in the clubhouse, he has that ability to be that. But that also means when he's struggling, he's a big presence.
If he doesn't hit, they're not going to win. I think this is a good way of saying if the good offense doesn't show up, they're not going to win.
Yeah. That's far better put than I said it. Thanks.
I think he said it the same way, roughly. But
you put it in like 8 words, and I put it in like a paragraph.
Okay, well, I'd like to get out of here fast, as you know, so I'd like to accelerate the narrative a bit.
You do like the economy, whereas I like the agony, right? Is that how that goes?
Well, you're more the Faulkner.
You are.
I just,
Shel Silverstein?
Me, yeah. I'm the cartoonist.
No, I can draw. I'm the cartoonist. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Mark. Thanks. I think we solved everything. We got it all solved.
Okay, well, so then they don't have to listen to any more podcasts. So this is the final one, right?
Right, yeah. This is the, no, we have a sponsor. This is the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Lumberland. So we have to do this. We don't have to. We get to do this every week now. So, but you can, if you want this to be your last podcast?
Yeah, I'll watch it. I'll take my answer off the air. Derek.
Again, thanks to Mark and Erica for joining me on the best podcast in baseball. And I hope that this kind of maybe patchwork podcast worked, and I was able to kind of pull it off with editing to make it something that we can do in the long run. There's no need to force somebody to spend an hour talking to me when they can spend 30 minutes, and I can put two of them together. As always, you can find the best podcast in baseball, along with all of the constant Cardinal coverage at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch at stltoday.com. That's where you can find a whole galaxy of podcasts, including ones hosted by Ben Fredrickson. They're also available at stltoday.com, or videos covering the team blogs. We also have weekly chats about the Cardinals. Any of it can be found there. There are also podcasts now starting up, well, really sprouting all over, from the news side to features to entertainment. So check all those out there. The best podcast in baseball, brought to you weekly by Lumberland Company, can also be found wherever you find your podcasts. That includes Stitcher and, of course, on iTunes, where you can listen to individual episodes. You can download individual episodes. You can even subscribe to the best podcast in baseball. I encourage you to subscribe to the best podcast in baseball. It's because of the subscriptions that we're able to have a sponsor, and it's because of the sponsor that we're able to bring this to you weekly. You can also rate and review the best podcast in baseball. I have not had a chance on this road trip to go and check out the reviews and ratings here recently, but I will, especially after this one, to see if this cobbling together of interviews worked, as it's a direction that I'd like to take the best podcast in baseball. Next week, the Cardinals close off the first half of the season before Miles Michaelis, the team's lone all-star at this moment, heads to Washington, D.C. We'll have a first half wrap-up for the best podcast in baseball. Look for it soon. It will only be a few days away. So for the best podcast in baseball on St. Louis Post-Dispatch, I'm baseball writer Derek Gould. Talk to you soon. All right, 3, 2, 1. Let's see if I can do this. What are you laughing about?
No, nothing at all. Inside joke.